Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
Thousands of Brazilians have taken to the streets to protest against the government of President Jair Bolsonaro as the country passed 500,000 COVID-related deaths and endures a third wave of the pandemic. Demonstrators chanted slogans and sported banners calling for Mr. Bolsonaro to go. These protesters said Jair Bolsonaro was playing with people's lives.
We're protesting against the genocidal Bolsonaro government that didn't buy vaccines and has done nothing to take care of its people in the last year.
The feeling here is one of indignation. We can't stand it anymore. The government is worse than the virus.
Infection numbers are increasing and intensive care units are operating close to capacity in most Brazilian states. Our America's editor, Leonardo Rocha, told me more about the pressure on Mr. Bolsonaro's government.
These demonstrations that happened across Brazil were huge, many of them very big in São Paulo, in Rio, and people with a number of demands against poverty. So there's a dissatisfaction against his government, but of course focusing on vaccines and focusing on his handling of the pandemic. And you have also to remember he's under pressure in Congress because the Senate opened an inquiry committee that has been investigating his government. And only on Friday, his current health minister and the former health minister have been placed under investigation by this committee. And the person who is in charge of the committee, the senator, said that President Bolsonaro himself might have to answer for all that has been done, all the mistakes that his government has made during this time.
And give us a sense of the impact of the government's decisions on the state of play in the country. Just how bad are things?
Well, things are really bad because now you're entering a third wave of the illness, of the pandemic. His first health minister said the worst case scenario was 180,000 deaths. That would be the worst possible scenario. And you have now 500,000. It's the second worst in the world. The United States has 600,000, but there people have been vaccinated. And the whole thing now has focused on the vaccine. In Brazil, only 11% of the population has been fully vaccinated. And what this Senate inquiry has been finding out is that the Bolsonaro government refused to buy millions of vaccines from Pfizer and from other labs when they had the opportunity to. And the accusation against him is that that was done for political motives, for political reasons, because from the beginning of the pandemic, he dismissed it and he said the economy should remain open. So when the opportunity to buy vaccines came up, he said, no, let's go with alternative medicines, hydrochloroquine and other medicines that he was trying to encourage. President Bolsonaro denied. He said the poor would suffer the most if the economy had been closed, and that he tried to buy vaccines. But there's a mood of despair in the country because there's no vaccines, and the number of deaths is going up again. We had in the past 24 hours, we had 2,300 deaths, and it's going up with the hospitals full, operating at full capacity.
Leonardo Rocha reporting.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Sunday, June 20, 2020. So I have been told. This is our global Sunday talk on racism. We do this once a month, third Sunday of every month, irregular time. We're normally on in the evening. Now I'm gonna see. I'm gonna do our mute just a little. Okay. We normally do this our third Sunday of every month. As I've said for a long time now, I think it's super important. The system of white supremacy racism is global. It is not something that is just isolated to a problem here in a few pockets of the U.S. or, you know, a few locations in South Africa, maybe that type of thing. That is totally incorrect thinking, and many, many non-white people all over the known universe get encouraged to think that way, not to think this is a global system where racism, white supremacy is coordinated, refined worldwide by individuals who classify themselves as white and are dedicated to dominating non-white people. Even interestingly, in that report that we just heard, which was talking about the COVID-19 situation, also global, in Brazil, that we've had folks on from that part of the world and have emphasized consistently, hey, huge population of black people there, more black people there than in the U.S., than in anywhere in the Western Hemisphere. That whole COVID situation is impacting a lot of dark people, non-white people, in that part of the world, who had many, many problems even before we got to COVID-19. I don't think they said anything about the racial classifications of the people who are having difficulties and suffering, not getting vaccines and all that, with not taking it seriously down there. I heard that throughout all of this, but that's the type of thing I think it's important to keep in mind when trying to analyze this problem, and why I think it's so crucial to have segments where we can talk to non-white people, different parts of the world, do some comparison contrast, get updates on the COVID-19 situation, as well as racism, white supremacy, and, you know, try to figure out strategies, things that might work anywhere in the known universe to help us solve this problem. The number, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-POUND. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, if we have any international folks, you can call in, get a hand up, let us know, report in from your part of the world. But if you have any folks stateside, certainly feel free. We'll chat it up with our folks in different parts of the world, and then make an opportunity. If you have questions, thoughts, observations that you want to share as well, we'll make time for that as well. But the number again, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-POUND. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Guess you could drop an email to untiljustice@gmail.com if you have a question or something that you would like to send in. Let's see. We got him. I was having difficulties. I had been calling Andrew, who's been with us many, many, many times for our Global Sunday Talk. Was trying to get him in, but we were struggling. But I think I got him. Let's see. Do we have Andrew with us in the UK? Let's see.
Hi, Gussie. I'm here. How are you? Are you okay?
Right. Like extra right poorly. I'm about as far from okay as you and I are, distance wise, but good to hear from you, Andrew. Thankful you could make some time for us this Sunday evening to hang out with us. I think we also have African 1884 with us, and Andrew with us in the UK, African 1884 I believe with us in Austria, if I got my geographic locations correct. African 1884 Not hearing you. Are you with us? I'm not sure if you're muted, unmuted. Sehan, just spent lots of that, Andrew. Lots of that. Just ridiculous. Looks like I've got him on the line. He should be with us. Let's see. Are you there? Avatar is there and everything. Are you with us, African 1884? Can you hear me? That is crazy. I don't know what's going on. I'll see if I can type it in, but I thought we had him right there. We'll try it again and see if we can get him on the line. Man, it's been challenging. Anywho, I'll add him back to the line. and see if we can start there. I guess we can. We'll start with Andrew, and then we'll see if we can get African 1884 back with us, fully vaccinated. Andrew, if folks recall, when he reported with us, I guess in May, end of May. I guess we'll start with the COVID-19 situation, since the Brazil clip, we're talking about that. So you're a month into your full vaccinated status, yes?
Yes, that's right. That's right, Gus. That's right.
Okay. Have things changed dramatically in that time, or is it still, hunker down and take it serious, distance, all that good stuff?
Well, I mean, what's changed since the last time we spoke? A bit closer to the full, I don't know what date it is, but a bit closer to the full opening up, if that's the correct phraseology. This new strain, God, where's it come from? This new strain from, I think it's from someplace in India, apparently. this new strain is apparently a lot more potent. So the full opening up may or may not be delayed to see what happens with that. I mean, this country, as far as I understand it, is now allowing 18-year-olds this place is now allowing 18-year-olds to take the vaccine. So that's what's going on at the moment. So that's where we are, really. I mean, but if I'm really honest with you, Gus, most people are carrying on as if it were before COVID. So most people are out and about, pubs are open, restaurants are open. So that's really where we are, back to business as usual, it seems to me.
That's what I wanted to hear. That's one reason right there why we have the Global Sunday Talk. Because I was saying, man, it seems at least where I am in the U.S. and from reports that I've seen in other locations, it seems like, hey, we are all done with this COVID thing. We have got beers to drink and summer plans that we have had on hold for a long time. We are getting back out to frolic and have fun. Like, that is pretty much what it seems like. I was curious to see, is it that way other parts of the world too? Is it just, hey, we are good. We're vaccinated. We're all done with this stuff. Like, let's go out and high five and have fun. Wimbledon is about to kick off. Like, we got fun times ahead. Wow. That's, did you have more?
Yeah. Plus, you see, what's helped that along is the fact that it's summer, it's British summertime, and the football was on. You've got the European Cup. So, all the pubs are open, using this as time to get people back in. It's summertime, so you've got big screens in various places around central London. And the pubs are using it to try and entice people back out. If you can have a screen, people, they will come. Have a screen, they will come. And it's raining at the moment, but earlier on in the week was really hot sun. So all of that has gotten people out and shopping, basically. So, yeah, there you go.
Out and shopping, he said. Wow, it is summer. Hey, everybody likes to be out in the sunshine. It is a glorious day here in Seattle. I'm sure folks are out frolicking and doing all that. Go get a pint and do some shopping and all the rest of it. He said football is on. Ball games leading the charge out against COVID. Before I get African 1884, we got him back. They had a report. They were talking about, I guess, a new book has come out, and they're doing investigations and how Prime Minister Boris Johnson and folks in the UK responded in the first few weeks, days of the COVID-19 crisis over there. And a few of these reports have been pretty damning, using terms like dysfunctional, saying, Boris Johnson and company, that using sports metaphors, they really dropped the ball. Same thing they said in Brazil, not taking this seriously, didn't do enough, and, didn't have any sort of serious response. Has that picked up any traction, or are people not even concerned about that?
To be honest, what's happened? Yeah, you got various inquiries as to how it was handled in the early days, plus this ex-cabinet member, Dominic Cummings, has been releasing or dribbling out a lot of his texts to Boris Johnson and other, various members of the cabinet. And you know, basically, he's just, you know, he, one time, right hand man of Boris Johnson. Boris Johnson gets rid of him, and then Dominic Cummings sees fit to release all of his texts to the news, basically. So that's been quite funny to watch. I don't think it's going to make a blind bit of difference to anything whatsoever. You know, that's number one, because it hasn't. You know, I mean, this week he's released a lot of text how Boris Johnson was slagging off other members of the cabinet in the early days. Can't remember what his name, but he's one of his main people. I can't remember what his name is. Name escapes me now. You know, the one that you've seen on TV, you know, when Boris Johnson's not been TV, he's had another chap on television. Cannot remember what his name is. He's a very forgettable man, basically, right? But yeah, you know, that's what Dominic Cummings has seen fit to do. But, you know, there's just one question, right? If somebody you've hired sees fit when you've gotten rid of him, when he's left, is to release loads of texts and secret messages and emails, who's going to hire him? You know, who's going to hire him? You know, he's unemployable. He's rendered himself unemployable. He knows it too. So that, you know, this is the same chap that thought it was a good idea to drive, you know, tell everybody one thing and then drive, you know, halfway through it up, you know, through England, right? After he's told everybody that they're going to get fined if they make any unnecessary trips by car, right? And he sees fit to drive to go see his mum, you know, his family members. So that's who Dominic Cummings is, right? So that's not. I don't think any of that's gonna mean anything, do anything. I don't think anybody really cares, if I'm really honest with you.
Not surprised at all. An individual being classified as white anywhere in the known universe, or even groups of individuals not being held accountable. Not a big deal. Moving on. Other fish to fry, other Negroes to terrorize. Let's see. African 1884, so we're switching from the UK, England specifically, to, well, I guess not the UK, they left. Sorry. England specifically. And then now we're transitioning to Austria, African 1884. I believe we have him back with us. Very good to hear from you, sir. So same question to you, and I'm not even sure if you're vaccinated, so I guess you can give the update on that if it's okay, if you want to share and everything. Vaccinated, and then what does it look like in Austria? Are you all preparing to get out and frolic for the summer, or is it still kind of cautious?
Yeah, good afternoon, Gus. Good afternoon, everyone. In Austria, they are slowly, gradually opening up, and starting from the 1st of July, I think they're saying that people will not be allowed to move about without the masks and everything. Things are getting back to normal in terms of gyms are now opened, sports activities can now take place. But still, when you go to a restaurant, you have to show, or to a disco, to a concert, you have to show proof that you've been tested. You have to have a PCR test. You have to also at the same time show that maybe you contacted the coronavirus before and you healed, or that you got vaccinated. So, again, the measures are being eased right now. People are slowly, gradually getting back to normal. So starting from 1st of July, everything will be fully opened, and people are not going to be having, they don't need to wear masks, but you have to make sure that you have a documentation saying that you've been tested or that you've been vaccinated, or that you contracted COVID before and you survived. Now, in terms of getting vaccinated myself, I've not been vaccinated. And just want to add a story to that because I recently got back from Uganda. I went back to Uganda after almost 10 years, went to visit family. And we had planned, myself, my wife, and my one-year-old son to visit Uganda for about 10 days. And unfortunately, while in Uganda, we all contracted the COVID-19 virus. We got the coronavirus. We all tested positive, the three of us, including my one-year-old son. So what symptoms do we have? I mean, I was not coughing. None of us was sneezing, but We lost taste and the sense of smell. That was very surreal. That was crazy. I've never experienced anything like that. I was biting and chewing into garlic and ginger, and I could not taste anything. I was very fatigued. Same thing with my wife. My son had a fever and everything. And once we tested positive in Uganda, we were immediately given sent to a clinic. This is how it's done in Uganda. You're sent to a clinic, and then you're given medication. So we were given a set of medication that was prescribed to us. My wife was very skeptical in terms of taking it, but I told her that we have nothing to lose because we didn't know. The symptoms were not like very dear, like with other people where you don't have, you're short of breath or you're coughing too much. We didn't have any of that. Yeah, but still, I told her, let's just take the medication just to be on the safe side. And one medication that they prescribed to us that we took was ivermectin. You can Google that. It's a drug that's been discussed in terms of if it's effective for treating COVID and everything. The WHO says it's not and advises many countries and governments to use it. But most African countries, specifically Uganda and Kenya, if you test positive, they give this drug and you have to take it for about, say, 5 days. So we got that and we took it. Like I say, we were supposed to be there for 10 days, but when it says a positive, we couldn't leave the country because to come back into Austria, you have to have a negative COVID-19 PCR test. So we had to wait approximately 1 week again, stay 1 week longer in Uganda. Then we tested negative, and then we were able to leave. And right now, Uganda is in a serious lockdown, and the cases are just rising. So when we go back to Vienna again, we did another PCR test and everything. Now we are waiting for a certificate from the government that says that we contracted COVID-19, myself, my wife, and my child, and that we are allowed to move freely for the next 6 months. And then now we can test again, you know. So that's the situation. And it was very unfortunate that our trip had to be like that because we going planning to travel to Uganda or Africa. The first thing that we were thinking about was just being careful with malaria or cholera, but we didn't expect this. And while we're there, we could not social distance. It's not really in our culture to go there and tell people that you can't visit them and that they can't hug you, they can't shake your hand or something like that. So it was people don't really social distance. It's pretty hard to do that in most African countries. So I think, and I don't know, maybe we got the corona on the flight to Africa, or maybe while we're in Africa, or I don't know. We don't know how we contracted it, but we thank the Creator that it was not very severe, and that we survived, and that we're good. Yeah, that's it.
That is some commentary. My goodness. Wow. Let me start. I will echo your sentiments. Thank goodness, you know, you all are well, safe. I guess it's a major understatement to say that's kind of a bummer for a trip to gear up and get to go to Uganda with your family and have plans to do all these exciting things and then end up contracting COVID. Yeah, and I mean, it sounds like that could have been all kinds of dangerous, like getting back home, and you got this medication to think about. Your wife is skeptical, rightly so, skeptical about, you know, do I want to take this? What is this going to do long term? Like, man, impact for your child. Yeah, that's just, man, be thankful everybody is safe. And yeah, just, wow, that is, what is the name of the medication that they gave you in Uganda?
It's called ivermectin. ivermectin. Okay. If you just write, if you Google ivermectin, COVID, or ivermectin in COVID, then you'll find results. I mean, it's currently still being discussed and debated if it really works and everything. And like I said, we were in a situation where personally myself, again, I was like, okay, you know what, I got to take something because I need to get a negative test, and then I need to, you know, I need to feel healthy again, you know. So I cannot, a lot of people are doing the traditional remedies and everything, which were working in some cases for some people, but then you have a lot of people in Uganda who are not testing also at the same time, and then they get shortness of breath. Before you know it, someone was alive in the morning, then in the evening he needs to be attached to an oxygen machine or something.
Wow.
And then before you know it, he's dying, you know. So I didn't want to take any risks and everything. And I read about this drug too, and I was like, okay, what's going to happen? I mean, right now, since we got back, we have an appointment with our house doctor sometime next week, because we just got back a week ago, and we're in quarantine here for 5 days and everything. And we need to just, again, I want to just check what, because there's some side effects with regard to this drug and everything. But what's crazy is that in Africa, specifically Uganda and Kenya, when you test positive for COVID, they give you drugs to take. Whereas in Austria, and I think in the US, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, they don't. If you don't have any underlining like cases or risks in like diabetes or anything, I don't think they give you immediately medication. They just tell you to go home, quarantine for 5 days or 1 week, and then you can test again. Whereas in Africa, immediately Kenya, Uganda specifically, they immediately give you this drug. They give you a bunch of drugs to take and everything. But this one is very one that's very, very specific in terms of it's supposed to be very effective in treating COVID-19. And it's called ivermectin.
Do you know if is this something that's manufactured on the continent, or is this something that they're importing? Or
yeah, they're importing it. For sure they're importing it. I mean, also India was prescribing that. But then again, they've changed, the government changed the guidelines, and they said they're not going to prescribe it anymore because they don't have. One thing that you have to understand with COVID is that, and there are not many cases or studies where you look at this particular drug and you say, okay, fine, we've tested it on 500 people and it has worked, you know. So it's right now it's a stage where people are just guessing and everything. And now in the case with my son, he's 1 year old, and with children, you're not supposed to be testing them for COVID and everything. But when we tested positive, we automatically knew that he's also positive because he started having fever too. And because we were sharing the same room, we're in a small Airbnb and everything, we're sharing the same rooms and bed and everything. And he had high fever and everything, but they told us not to test him. Okay, that's a positive, because now that's like more or less standard in the whole world. In Austria, they also don't test children. Also in Africa, they don't test children. And they also refuse to prescribe any medicine for him. So we just gave him some paracetamol to take. And that kind of like helped him with the fever and everything. I was worried because, again, many people are saying that with children, they have a way of dealing with COVID-19. But I was still worried as a parent, because I don't know if your son could be an exception to the rule, to the case and everything. And then things go left, you know. So, but we didn't test him. We just gave him paracetamol. And just to answer your question, this drug is manufactured not in Africa. It's not manufactured in Africa. 100% sure it's not. So we just imported. Yeah.
100%. That is what domination looks like. He said 100% sure, not manufactured on the continent. Yeah, and to your point about just comparing what happens in different parts of the world, again, that's why I think, you know, this is important, just doing a comparison contrast about different things. In the U.S., I have heard frequently exactly what you said, where I'd never heard of this drug before. I'm not a medical professional, so that doesn't mean anything, but I had not heard of this drug before. I'm going to have to check that out. But that has been very, very common in terms of no drugs, no medications, like quarantine for so many days and, you know, come back, that type of thing. That's been read about that. We've had some people who've reported that where it seemed they tested positive and they didn't. I mean, they could have, but they didn't give reports about medications and that sort of thing. They were just told, you know, quarantine, be away, that sort of thing. We'll test you again and see what it looks like. So very different protocols, I guess you would say, depending on where you happen to be in the known universe. That is, wow, especially with the children, like, wow, understandably so. I'm not a parent, but I would be super nervous. That's not even the word. Thinking it, a one-year-old, that's such a young child too, like, my goodness. I guess, you know, before we get all into your business about that, the not being able to smell, because I mean, that's, I think, a common one that people have heard with the whole COVID-19, losing your sense of smell and taste and all that. Some people, I guess, for a sustained amount of time, some people it doesn't last as long. I guess one, for people who have some doubts about this who say this is something other than what's being reported, did you or your wife at any point have any thoughts that, hey, maybe this is something else, maybe this is not COVID-19?
Well, she did have those similar thoughts that, because again, like, initially we were like, listen, we would never get COVID. Or even that, we were like thinking of just malaria, you know. So we had all these creams and everything and sleeping under the mosquito net and all that. Then when we got the positive results, because I started feeling weak, and I told her, listen, I'm feeling weak. I don't need to move around a lot, you know. Let me just go back home and rest. And she's like, nah, you're good and everything. Maybe it's because you haven't been here in a minute. You know, it's okay. You're fatigued. We traveled a lot, you know. We started doing visiting people around and everything. So maybe that's why you're fatigued. Don't worry, you know. You're not sick. And I told her, no, what I'm feeling is quite different, you know. Then she was like, well, cool. Then I told her, let's get tested. And then, but when she saw the results, then she was like, whoa, okay, this is real, you know. And I was like, yeah, we're both positive. And it's like, oh, but how is that possible? I was like, well, these are the results. And then she started getting the symptoms now. She started feeling fatigued and everything and tired and all that. And then that's when she was like, okay, I think this is it. This is it, you know. But then she was trying to still push back on the medication. Then I told her, listen, let's just, I mean, and I get this from Mr. Fuller, you know, I mean, as a victim of racism, white supremacy, I mean, you could think COVID is a scam or something, or it's not real, but if it's real, you need to treat yourself, man. And how are you going to treat yourself, you know? So white folks who have all this medication, maybe that could be harmful to you, but at the same time, could also not be harmful to you. But then, again, like I said, as a victim of racism, white supremacy, it's hard to make that judgment and like to balance that out, and because you could say no, it could be to your disadvantage. Before you know it, you're going to meet your maker, and you could just take the medication that maybe it does help you. I don't know, you know. So that's why I just talked to her and I told her, listen, let's just take it, you know, and yeah, and hope for the best. That's it, you know.
Context of white supremacy. Got to be logical about things. Just pausing for a moment, like, oof. Again, I do not have children, but I mean, wow. We talk about, he mentioned Neely Fuller Jr., where he has the suggestion for 200 questions and all that, like, wow. That, I mean, the scope of what those 200 questions should be about. So, we're in a global health pandemic. Do we want our child to be vaccinated? That is a doozy of a question to chat it up before you hit the bedroom to, let me see what this person thinks about vaccinating children. Let's see. Maybe they haven't even thought of it, which is spectacular. Do some research, do some thinking before I even have a child. Like, why so many things that you would not even consider? There's no way you could consider them all, but I mean, to even begin to think about the decisions that you are going to have to make being a parent. Whew. Man, and who planned? Last question, I'll get back to Andrew over in the UK. Yes, the UK. Did you all have any conversation about parenting in a global health pandemic before your child was conceived?
What, before he was conceived? God, no, not at all. 15 years, my son's 15. So, God, 2003, no, he's born, sorry, 2005, 6. No, we didn't have conversations about, we didn't even, I suppose, possibly like many people, you know, 15 years ago, it was the stuff of science fiction to think about a global, I mean, the last one we had, I suppose that may have been AIDS. You know, going back to the mid-80s, you know. So, I mean, not before Isaiah, you know, our son was conceived. Since has been interesting because, you know, we spoke quite a bit about how, and basically, sorry to hear about what happened to you, African 1884. That's you obviously have been through it. So, yes, really sorry to hear about that. I'm not sure what to say, really. But no, we spoke quite a bit, haven't we, Gus, about the stress on young people at this moment in time worldwide. And, you know, for kids of my son's age group, I suppose it's more about that level of stress. I mean, if you're a young child, chances are you may not know what's happening. You may see people wearing masks, but if you're a young toddler, then people wearing masks has probably become your normal. You know, it's probably become your normal because, you know, the last 1.5 years watching people wear, well, the last 12 months watching people wear masks and stuff like that. So, but for, you know, for older kids, it's been a little bit tough, you know, because obviously not at school exams, you know, playing around, you know, maybe your friends haven't been out and about. You've been to see no one, you've had to stay at home. So it's all been that psychological type stress and all the rest of those things, you know, living life through social media and Zoom and other platforms and stuff like that, you know, getting addicted if you weren't already to social media and PlayStation and things like this, you know. So really it's more been about all of that with my son more than he doesn't live with me. For the most part, he lives with his mum. So, you know, so it's, yeah, so, you know, so dealing with all of those things, you know, has been, you know, I mean, if I'm really honest with you, I've already said to you, Gus, that last year, you know, I had quite a nice time through lockdown, not like everybody else. You know, I wasn't at work for the most part, working from home, out in the, you know, just playing tennis, jogging, you know, I mean, it was, you know, but I think I had COVID personally around about February because everybody seemed to be ill in my school. And it's only when we sat down and thought about it, we thought, all right, all of us in this place were ill around about February last year. So possibly, yeah, so maybe that's, you know, maybe I've already had it. You know, so yeah, there you go. But sorry to hear about what happened to you, African 1884. That's you've been through it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Context of white supremacy. Much obliged, Andrew. African 1884. I'll give out the number for listeners if y'all have a question for some of our international guests. 720-716-7300, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Absolutely, it is man, lot, and it has been stressful for young people. Like he was talking about all the social media, that immediately reminded me. We did a program, I was going to say last week, I guess, last 5 days, Tuesday, there, where we had Mr. Joseph D. Feaster, black male attorney. He does a lot of work with black mental health, and he talked about the rise in suicides among black children, especially black boys and younger black males. And we talked about the social media component, and even in fact, they have statistics suggesting that the number or the rates of suicide for young black people, especially black boys and younger black males, has gone up over the last few decades, and then acutely over the past year or so with the pandemic. We asked Mr. Feaster about the social media component, and he said, absolutely, all the bullying and everything that goes on there and the racism and terrorism that happens online in general. He said even over the past year or year and a half or whatever that it's been, now he's, as Andrew just said, getting them addicted if they weren't already, because now you got to do everything virtually in Zoom, or at least it has been for the last year and a half. And to have the entire world be that, and then to have rejection or slander and all that, like it just becomes even more magnified. So, Man, I hope, if anything, I hope lots more folks take advantage over this time to do some of what Andrew talked about, being able to get outside, do some jogging, some tennis, some fresh air, where you can be in open space and not inside congested and all of that, and burn a few calories, do some things for your health and wellness, get a hike in, get a swim in, get a walk in even. Spectacular. Anywho, I'll double check the phone line. Yes, sir.
Do you mind if I ask African84 a couple of questions?
Help yourself.
African84, do you know, because did you say you went to Uganda?
Yes, I did.
I was going to ask, do you know what the rates of COVID infection or COVID death is in Uganda?
Right now, it stands at 500 per day.
500 deaths per day?
Yes.
Right. Wow. So it's gone up.
Yeah, it's gone up. Continue.
I was going to ask you, do you know what's the main strain there at the moment as well? I was going to ask you that. Is it the one that's come from the part of from somewhere in India, or is it from elsewhere?
I'm not sure about what variant it is. I never got to try and find out. But what's interesting, the difference is that it's affecting a lot of children in Uganda, the younger generation, because if I recall correctly, when you look at the first wave in Europe, in most parts of the world, it was affecting mainly older people, yeah? But in Uganda, with this, I think it's a second wave or third wave, I think second wave, yeah, it's affecting mainly young people. So you have children who are in boarding schools and in high school, primary school, going back home with the virus, and then passing it on to the grown-ups, to the elders, to the parents, and everything. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And what are the Ugandans actually saying about the COVID-19 pandemic? You know, what are people on the ground actually saying? Did you get a chance to actually, you know, talk to people on the ground, like your family and other people?
Yeah. First, let me correct what I said before. The infections are 500 per day. The deaths, I think, are much less than that. Not 500. So I need to correct that. You know, but the infections are 500 per day. To answer your question in regard to what people think, like I say, people don't. It's expensive to test. You know, testing costs about $70 or something. So
right.
the average person cannot test. So people tend to just have fevers and maybe they're coughing and sneezing, and they think it's just a normal cold, and they try to use the local remedies of just treating it and everything. And in some cases, it might not be COVID. In some cases, it is COVID, you know. But the average people are still very skeptical about it. They're not really sure if it's really, really coronavirus or COVID, you know.
Right. Okay.
And then it's like the whole context needs to be understood, because if you test, it costs money, and then they send you to a clinic to buy drugs that cost money, and those drugs, you need to also eat well while you're taking those drugs. So, and also eating well costs money. You're not just going to eat just any regular food or something. There's certain diet you have to eat to be able to take some of that medication with you, you know. So it's pretty complex and expensive for most people. So people just tend to go like, okay, you know what, this thing's not even real. You know, the government wants to make money. We just use our local remedies and everything. But then I was there, and I have relatives, people who have died, and I've seen that. So you're like, okay, you know what, maybe some of this medication needs to be taken, you know. So, like I said before, it's very hard. You need to have this balance, and it's not easy, you know.
No, thanks for that. I just wanted to know what the COVID numbers were there in terms of death. Thanks for that information. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, the infections, again, it's about 500 per day and everything. The deaths are much lower. Like, as an aggregate, the total deaths are much lower. You know, they say 334 deaths or something like that. I mean, if you Google that, for example, you know. But the last time I was there, the infections were like 500 per day.
Yeah. Right, so it's climbing, basically.
Yes.
That's the bottom line. No, thanks for that. Appreciate it. Sorry, Gus.
Thank you.
No apologies needed. That's why I think this is important. Give people an opportunity to just kind of check in, see what's happening in different parts of the world. It's, you know, such a massive universe, and just trying to get a grasp of what's happening. So, yeah, no apologies. I was learning myself. I have tried to keep an eye on at least one site where they're tracking these numbers, allegedly, worldometers.info. And so this is a site I've checked just for the COVID-19 reports in different parts of the world for about the past year or so. And they update daily, what have you. I've seen other people reference this page as well. So, of course, the U.S. is number one. Uganda is all the way down at 107 in the world for total cases at 71,543, which is laughable. Or, yeah, I won't say laughable. It is extremely pitiful when you look back up at the U.S. So for total deaths, Uganda, 660 total deaths, which, again, you look at the U.S. numbers. Wow. Now, I mean, they have a much smaller population, but still 660 new deaths, in line with what we heard from African 1884. New deaths per day seems pretty low. They have 34 new deaths and total cases. I think I already gave total cases. Yeah, 71,543. So, again, much smaller population there. You're talking about just like 1.25 million people, smidge over. But, yeah, thus far has not had nearly the impact as in some of the other parts of the world. But as he said, numbers going up, hopefully. Sounds like they're taking it serious. He said putting in restrictions and all of that. So hopefully they will keep that up. As I've seen repeatedly for about the past year and a half, it seems most of the spots on the continent have taken this seriously and have, you know, restricted travel and given out medication, even according to Africa in 1884. It does seem like they're taking this very seriously. Hopefully that will bode well and, you know, keep things from becoming dire on the continent, Uganda or anywhere else. Let me double check, see if folks have questions they want to get in. I'll double check.
Sure we could I add something?
African 1884? Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just want to add something in regard to Austria. And like I said, so starting from July, 1st of July, they're going to fully open up and everything. But then I was speaking to a white man today, and he was telling me that due to the Delta variant of coming out of the UK has been identified in Austria too, and he thinks that they're gonna lock down again sometime in October, November, you know. So I don't think it's still finished yet. I think there's still gonna be another lockdown. That's what he was trying to tell me, you know. And I just had a question. I want to ask you and Andrew with regard to the masks that people are wearing in the U.S. or what's been prescribed or what government guidelines have said with regard to the masks that people are wearing. Because in Austria, it's very strict now. You have to have a FFP2 mask or KN95 mask. You know, everywhere you go, you have to wear that particular mask, because previously people were wearing the clothing masks or people just designing their own masks at home and everything. And also the same thing in Uganda and everything, where the steel. And then again, with Uganda, I don't mean to mention this again, because it's still expensive to have these KN95 masks and everything. So people tend to have the much cheaper clothing masks and everything. And there have been reports here in Austria that these other masks are not very effective. So my question to you is that how is it in the U.S.? What masks are people wearing in the U.K. and in the U.S.?
In the U.S., now, no masks for, I would say, many, many locations. I think the state of California, the state of New York. I'm here in Seattle, Washington. I think we're a few days away from lifting all restrictions. So in many areas, no masks. I think about, it was last month, I think towards the end of last month, the Centers for Disease Control, they made the announcement that the vaccines are so effective that if you are vaccinated, you do not need to wear a mask inside, outside, and you do not need to continue social distancing. And that had almost immediate ramifications where, like I said here, I'm in Seattle, Washington. They made that announcement on a Thursday, like afternoon or later in the day. And by like Sunday, I went to the grocery store here and they had changed the mask policy. It went from a strict mandate, you know, no mask, no entrance, strictly enforced and yada, 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 declined service to, well, you know, if you're not vaccinated, might be cool to wear a mask, but if you're vaccinated, you don't need it. Like, it was stunning. I mean, and on a dime to have it shift that rapidly. In addition to, there were lots of, what the phrase I've been using, there was lots of white defiance anyway, where there were many white people in many, many locations who had staunchly refused to wear any type of mask anyway. So there was never, to my recollection, any type of strict, you need to wear this, you know, the N95 or this, these special masks, or we got to, you know, really take this here. That was never the case. There was so much resistance and people absolutely refusing to wear any sort of face covering or to take this serious and all the rest of it. And, you know, now with the CDC's report from a few weeks back about, you know, the back, if you're vaccinated and how effective it is, like, that's why I said at the beginning, all of that is gone. Like, this stuff is over. We are done with all that. It is time to get out and high five everybody and celebrate, burn your masks. We are having fun again. So to answer your question, they are not. Masks are kind of done. They still for some stores and things, but it's certainly no strict, like, you got to have this special N95 mask to protect. Like, it's, you know, whatever. You can wear a face covering, homemade mask, paper mache, whatever. And that is about to be gone in a matter of days anyway. Andrew in the UK.
Hiya. In this country, you still got to wear a mask, but, you know, there's no stipulation as to what type of mask. You could just basically just wear anything you want. I mean, basically, it doesn't work. It's just lip service. I mean, you know, I mean, you can, I mean, people have been going into shops with no mask on, no one says anything. You know, you're meant to get a fine if you wear, you know, go on public transport without a mask. But the truth is, people do, you know, most people still wear masks. But if you don't wear a mask, then there's no fine. I mean, the police were handing out fines, you know, but not anymore. You know, when it comes to, yeah, and you could just wear any mask you want. You could just put a scarf around your face, basically, you know. So it seems to be lip service. People are just paying lip service to it. The police are not enforcing anything. Supermarkets, most people still wear masks, but if you don't, it seems like that, you know, security guard out in the supermarket just turns a blind eye. I think that's because most people have had the first vaccine. You know, that's my sort, because I was wondering, you know, why is no one doing anything? So I think it's because most people have had had the first vaccine. Half the country's had the second vaccine. So I think that's the reason why. But there's never been any stipulation here to wear, and we call it, in this country, we call it an FFP2 mask. The highest one is FFP3. But quite quickly, I had one of those ones, but those masks are minimum of £5 each. So people are not going to be, and you've got to throw them away, right, after you've used it once. So there's no way the government was going to be making it a stipulation that you have to have that mask. The FFP2 mask is a little bit cheaper, But even that, you know, they're still, you know, quite expensive, you know, £3 each, and you've got to throw them away once per day. So, you know, the government can't force people to be buying those masks, you know, no way, no chance. So people have just been wearing the cheap surgical masks. You know, you can get 10 for, what, £3? Or they've been wearing the same mask over and over again, which is not what you, that sort of defeats the purpose. Or they've just been wearing just a homemade mask, you know, or their own, buying their own mask and just washing it and wearing it again, you know. But either way, none of that really works. Do you know what I mean? You know, not against COVID. So, but I think, you know, as I said, because people have been vaccinated, I think that's why the government's laying off people.
Thank you for that. Yeah.
Incidentally, Seattle, Washington, they report that this is the first major city in the U.S. to vaccinate 70% of its population. That's one of the reports that I saw earlier in the week. So I'm not sure if that is influencing the, or I'm sure it has to be influencing the rapidly relaxing restrictions that people have and seeing, because you see way fewer signs now about masks. Like I think almost immediately, like at the park, one of the parks that I go to pretty regularly, just at the end of May, they had lots of signs posted that if you're outside at the park, you still have to have a mask on, you still have to distance. Like, let's say, in fact, that park had been closed for a good chunk of the year and a half shutdown, because it's pretty popular, especially in the summertime, like now, or even not in the summertime, it's pretty popular. But they shut the park down because it can be difficult, especially when it's crowded, for people to stay apart. Lots of big groups go out and gather, play basketball and things like that, where you're breathing on people and, you know, all the rest of it. So it had been closed. They opened it back up. But like I said, they had lots and lots of signs, gotta have a mask, blah, blah, blah. I'm not sure how that was enforced. Like I've been there many times. I never saw like security, you know, enforcement officials that, where's your mask at? What are you doing? Get it. Like I never saw anything like that or fines or anything of that nature. But once that announcement was made by the Centers for Disease Control, most of those signs disappeared. People stopped wearing masks at the park because they said if you're vaccinated, you didn't have to. So nobody pretty much is wearing masks outside anymore. Those signs aren't there. The distancing, it is pretty amazing how rapidly things changed. And again, we're supposedly in a city where 70% of the population is vaccinated. So super white Seattle. Let's see. I was going to ask to make sure I asked about the situation in Canada, a white man charged with terrorism. I thought that was like, wow, to have that happen anywhere in the world, because that like practically never happens, as well as the changeover in Israel with the new prime minister. But I wanted to double check to make sure there weren't any other topics that you all thought were important that we should maybe spend a word on before we get to those two other subjects as well. Anything, Andrew, African 1884, other topics that you all thought were important?
I don't know if it's worth spending too much time on, but just this, I don't know if it's, I'm sure it's happening in the States as well. And it'd be interesting to see, ask you African 1884 if it's happening there as well. In various friends have told me that in their workplaces there's been these initiatives by white management, senior management, to try and either pay, call it what you want, pay because of what last year George Floyd, to pay lip service to talk about, to form groups about da 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 racism, right? And you see, yeah. So I just wanted to know if this is a thing in the States in various workplaces where white management want to try to liberal management are trying to do something about, or say they're trying to do something about, or whatever the phraseology is. With in their workplaces, you know. Reason why I'm asking that, because it's happening here. Loads of my friends have told me in different professions that this is what white management is doing. and the conversations are interesting. You know, the conversations are interesting. I mean, all of this has happened before, as we've said before, you know, in the late 60s, in the early 80s in England, I'm talking about, and it's happening again now. So it's a weird one, interesting one. It's good to know if that's happening in the States and where you are, Africa, 1884. But Gus, you can go to what you're going to go to first. We've just been looking at this in this country now for the last year. So it's everyone, you know, we're all going, what's going on? What's going on at work? So we just wanted to see, yeah, whether or not this is happening elsewhere.
Fascinating. Workplace racism every Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Let's... Always up for workplace racism. In a word, yes. I don't know about Austria. We'll get African 1884's thoughts. I'll eagerly await his reply as well. But I know here in the U.S., absolutely. And in fact, it's been even, how shall I phrase it? It's been particularly nauseating because here in the U.S., they just made Juneteenth like a federally white recognized holiday. So that's added like a whole nother layer because you've had like major white corporations, Google, Nike, Starbucks, the NBA, for goodness sakes, where they, you know, are celebrating Juneteenth. So they have like, I'm exaggerating, but not really. Like they'll have like kente cloth styled Starbucks mugs and I think Google had some sort of tacky Juneteenth animation up. They probably still, let's see what's on Google. Let's see. But it was that sort of thing on a wide scale and diversity and include. Oh, they changed it up. They changed it for summer or for Father's Day. Sorry. But yeah, it was lots of that sort of thing. Diversity and inclusion seminars. And as you said, paying lip service to George Floyd and that. We've had lots of reports where they even have done studies like, wow, it seems like a lot of companies have done this over the past year to stop and we're going to have, you know, a watermelon session or Fried Chicken Friday in honor of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor or Black Lives Matter soiree type of a thing, or we're going to have our Juneteenth Jamboree and we'll all come in and listen to Drake songs and MC Hammer and appreciate Negro culture, that type of thing. It has been very widespread and very tacky. African 1884 in Austria?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much the same in Austria. I mean, if I speak specifically to the United Nations, they've been having just what you mentioned, diversity trainings coming from the higher management. And what's interesting enough is that, I mean, I guess it's how white supremacists do this, is that they, while discussing racism, they'll also discuss the issues with the LGBT community. They'll discuss all other sorts of discriminations, and they'll put the whole thing, like, mix everything up together and stuff, you know? So they come up front, like, saying, okay, we're going to discuss racism and everything, and before you know it, while they're providing that training, at the same time they're putting that LGBT component and the women discrimination component and major discrimination component. You know, they'll just mix everything up. You know, but they've been doing that very much ever since. Again, the case with George Floyd and everything. And there's also one particular German company. It's called Zalando. They also have a campaign right now in Austria, and they're one of their videos. They have it's also about inclusion and diversity and fighting racism. So in one of the videos, they have you have a white man that's like an amputee. He didn't have arms and everything. And then they have a black person, and then they have a lesbian, and then they have a gay person, and then they have a midget. This is like it's all confusing, you know, for black people. They're not addressing our problems. And they do this very tactically to just keep us confused that when we talk about racism and white supremacy, then we have to discuss all these other issues before we get to the real problem. Yeah. So they've been doing that a lot here. Again, diversity and trying to make sure that there's a form of respect and equality within the workspace and all that, you know.
Seems like that has been, we've heard that before, mixing everything in. I looked, one of the definitions for confusion is a mixed jumble. Ding! But they'll mix it all in. We got, you know, LGBT, and sometimes they'll do ageism. I mean, they'll disability, and they'll throw it all in. Women's issues, patriarchy, sexism, the Dolphins. Like, it'll be like, what? I thought we were talking about George Floyd. We're going to get to him, too. We got that. We got a lot of things. Like, confusion, conflation. It's one of the terms that we've used.
Sorry, no, also that horrible word. Sorry, but I've got to say, intersectionality, right? And then it allows people to talk about all the other stuff that we've just, you know, I hate the word. Sorry to interrupt. Sorry, apologies.
I feel you. It's done strategically, in my opinion, intersectionality and diversity, inclusion. They won't even say racism. It'll be race a lot of times. If they even say that, it'll privilege, discrimination. Like, it'll be lots of ways to obfuscate, confuse, and not really address the problem. It'll just, you know, someone will maybe invoke George Floyd's name, or they'll have his t-shirt on or something else, and then they'll, you know, conveniently scoot to other issues, and maybe we'll shed a tear or two, we'll sing a song, and grab some watermelon on our way out. Like, does not get any better than tacky, and not a single problem solved for any of the black people, non-white people who work there. As I said, there's white men. I'm saying a white man, which is correct. It's nothing inaccurate about that, but I mean, he was 20. I've been pointing that out for the record, because a lot of times, one, they like to say that racism, white supremacy is old white people. You know, it's Donald Trump in his era. And once these folks slip on a bar of soap or die out or whatever it is, this problem will be solved. And that is totally incorrect in every which way. As I said, this young fella, 20 years old, who goes out and kills four people, runs them over with a car. I mean, talk about a cowardly act. Nathaniel Veltman, that's his name. Reminded me, Dylan Stormroof, almost to a year to when Dylan Stormroof killed 9 people in the congregation in South Carolina. I believe he was like 21. At the time of those murders. These are, you know, really super young whites who are not confused at all about white supremacy, racism. But was this a big deal in your respective parts of the world, England, Austria, this white man killing a Muslim non-white family, or killing 4 members of the family, and then being charged with an act of terrorism? Did this make big headlines over there? Was this other side of the world? We don't really care.
Sorry, but I never heard about that at all. That I don't think they reported on that at all, Gus, in the UK. Or the BBC World Service. You know, I've been listening to the news there, and the, you know, just the news you get on the TV. I never heard about that at all. So it's good to hear about it from you now.
That is crazy. Okay. Let's see. That's Andrew in London. African 1884 in Austria. Is this news to you, or did you hear about this attack in Canada?
I heard it through my social media handles, people that I communicate with on social media, but it was not reported on national TV. You know, not even mentioned on national TV. Yeah.
That is embarrassing. And now the contrast is, now if this had been a black person, a Muslim, ran down a family of four white people, children included, killed both of the parents and all that. If that had happened, I am very sure this would have been, like, loudly broadcast. Like, and even beyond, that's important. I'm not, you know, trying to minimize that. I'm also adding the fact that we had a white man charged or is facing terrorism charges. Like, I don't even think that happened with Anders Breivik in Norway. I'd have to go back and look in 2011 to see if he was charged with terrorism, because I remember there was a big to-do because they were not really using the language of terrorism when that event happened. After it was, oh, this is a white man who did this. Oh, this is just a shame. Not, this is a terrorist, and my goodness, and, you know, how did we let this happen type of it. He got a PlayStation. In fact, he did all that arguing because they didn't even put him on death. They don't have death penalty in Norway, I don't believe, but he did all that arguing saying he had to get a PlayStation 3 or 5 or whatever number they're up to and all the rest of it. But yeah, I thought that was equally important, the fact that Dylan Stormroof, what I just said, that they didn't charge Dylan Stormroof. He went into a church and killed 9 black people. Plotted it, all of it, bragged about it, wrote his manifesto allegedly. They didn't charge him with an act of terrorism, but this white fella facing terrorism charges, and they already started with the whatever you want to call it, the term they used here in the U.S. a while back, affluenza, whatever it is, and saying, oh man, his parents got divorced, and, you know, he had a difficult childhood. Let me see if they have any of it in the report here. They were talking about the statement about the victims. Just brief commenting on the additional terrorism charge on Monday, Canada's Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland said it was important to name the attack as an act of terror. I agree. Call things what they are. With murder terrorism charges, prosecutors must prove there was the intent to cause death or serious harm, evidence that the act was committed for a political, religious, or ideological purpose, and evidence that the act was meant to intimidate the public or a specific group. All Muslims, he killed for them, as I said. I have to go back to look again to see if they had any evidence of, you know, if he had done some problems, but I had already seen the evidence was, oh man, he had family issues. Poor fella. Man, it's a tragedy. We've got mental health problems that need to be. It was that type of a not, oh my God, what is going on? This is the same type of thing January 6th in the U.S., and we've got to do more about these domestic terrorist threats and white men specifically. Like, it was not that type of tone at all. But again, 20 years, they should have been Dylan Roof. This is 1 year or 6 years. Yeah, that was 2015. 6 years from Dylan Roof in South Carolina. That should have been the immediate comparison, as well as the other numerous attacks where people have used vehicles to slam into edifices and or people. Let me see, double checking, because this is not our long program like normal. The number 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Last few minutes before we wrap things up, if you have a question, don't wait till the last moment. I know here here in the States, it also has got a lot of attention, much more than the terrorist attack in Canada. Both the conflict in the area of the world known as Israel, the conflict there, Israelis, Palestinians, all of that, just another element of white supremacy, racism, that has received a lot of attention. And then the change in leadership, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, his 12-year reign coming to an end. Has that been getting a lot of attention? Like, has that been driving conversations with folks over there? Because, like, it's gotten so agitated. Like, they've had a number of reports of, like, brawls breaking out in the streets between these two groups here in the U.S. With their different factions that they're in support of. Has this been a big deal over there in your respective areas?
Yes, I mean, that one's received a lot of press coverage in the UK, and there's been a lot on TV about that one. Lots of press coverage, I would say. Yeah, a fair bit of conversation as well, depending on what groups you're in, you know, but that's received a lot of a lot of press attention, because obviously that is a balance of power in for white countries in that part of the world. And the whole thing revolves around oil, you know, oil. So, yeah, it's received a lot of press coverage, loads. Interesting, because now that you have Biden in, I would like to see whether or not, my guess is he's not going to change the American, he's going to put the iron fist, if you like, inside a glove. But I don't think the approach is gonna change. I don't think the approach is gonna change. But there's been a lot going on here, protests, this, that, and the other, all kinds of stuff. Mainly with white, in and amongst white people. There's been a lot around that.
Okay, that's Andrew in London. So protests, that last point, very important. Mainly white people. Always give pause there. Why would white people be scurrying around in the streets in the midst of a global pandemic about this? It's not even happening in, you know, our so-called country. African 1884, Austria. Has the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, has that been a big to-do in Austria?
Yes, it did. Yes, it has. And I wanted to echo just what you said previously with regard to the terrorist attack in Canada and not getting coverage here. One of the reasons, because, again, if it was a non-white male, a black male who did that, then I guess we have gotten coverage. Another reason is also why I didn't get a lot of coverage is because of the conflict in what you call Palestine. There have been demonstrations in Austria. As you know, Austria has a very important role with regard to the mistreatment of Jewish people during the Second World War, and also with regard to having the United Nations here and Austria trying to play the neutral role. So whenever I have meetings, when they're talking about the Iranian, proliferation of nuclear weapons, they come and meet in Austria. When they talk about this conflict in Palestine, they tend to come and meet in Austria. But recently, as this conflict was going on, the Prime Minister of Austria showed solidarity for Israel, and that led to a lot of white liberals going out into the streets and demonstrating and saying that they side with the Palestinians and that Israel is a racist state and it practices apartheid towards the Palestinian people. But this brings me to the thought. I remember I spoke about this with Neely Fuller, Mr. Neely Fuller, and he said that this is a conflict that white people intentionally put up, and it just pops up once, and then everyone's attention is supposed to be drawn towards this conflict, you know, and then it dies down, everyone packs their bags and goes to sleep and everything, and after a year or two, then it pops up again. Then we have to pay attention and raise our heads, and everyone, please stop what you're doing, what's happening in Israel and Palestine, let's pay attention to that. And then it dies on again. So Mr. Fuller said that this is a conflict that's going to be ongoing, and the white people do that intentionally just to distract us from so many things, you know. But yes, it did get attention in Austria, and it's still getting attention in Austria. A lot of attention, yes.
A lot of attention. Important point, those distractions in terms of when this becomes a big deal and what other things are happening, what people are paying attention to. And as I said, that's why I said, I thought Andrew's point, he said it was mainly white people out protesting. That's another one, talking about mixing things in together. They will find ways of lumping that in where it'll start off being something where we were talking about racism, white supremacy, and George Floyd. And then they'll see, it's the same thing with Israel. Israel's doing George Floyd to Palin, that type of a thing. White supremacy, racism is global, but lots of distractions. lots of distractions on the planet. Not that I would encourage being out to participate in any sort of protests or marches anyway. I've not seen where that is constructive or helps us solve any problems, but especially if it's going to be a lot of white people yelling about Israel, either way, very suspicious. Last few moments before we wrap up. Let's see. Rachel in New York, did you have a question for any of our international participants? Oh. Doing her heartsy parenting. Heavy duty work. Woo. Man, oh man. Much respect for our attempted parents. Did you have a question, ma'am?
Yes. Good afternoon to Gus, the guests, and all the callers. My question is, or I have a few questions. Does your country mandate vaccination for children attending school? If not, do you think they will? And the last question is, would you vaccinate your child or your children?
I'll answer that. At the moment, it's come down to 18 and above. So as of last week, if you're 18 and above, the government is basically recommending that you go and get yourself vaccinated. Would I ask my son who's 15 to go and get vaccinated? If he's going to be in contact, so for me, the answer is yes, if he's going to be in contact with anyone who's old, elderly, or if he's going to be in contact with anyone who's in a high risk group. So anyone who's in a, you know, if my son's going to be around any elderly person in my family or anyone in my family who is in a high risk group, that's somebody who's got diabetes, high blood pressure, you know, all the diseases that black people have, you know, black people got high diabetes, blood pressure, you know, because we eat a lot of salt, sugar and fat, right? That's the truth. Well, I know we don't like to say it, but we eat a lot of salt, sugar and fat. That causes us to have diabetes and high blood pressure and a load of other stuff, right? So if any of my family that have got that and loads of, well, all my uncles and aunties have, right, then basically if my son is not going to be around those people or anyone else that I like who's got high blood pressure or in a high-risk group, if they're not going to be around, then the answer is no. But because I know we have family get-togethers on a regular basis, and because I know through my reading and through my friends who are medical doctors that basically if you have the A vaccination, it lowers your chance of passing it on to the people that you personally care about, that's the reason why I'll get my son to get vaccinated. Anyone I don't care about doesn't matter. And so, you know, that's kind of my answer to that. If your child is under 5, and that kind of thing, I'm not a doctor, I can't give that kind, you know, I mean, my son's 15, I can't say a yay or nay on that one, but, you know, so I would say to anyone, seek medical advice from a doctor you personally trust. Hope that helps.
Okie doke. That's, Andrew in London, African 1884, Austria.
Yes. With regard to vaccinating children, the Austrian state is vaccinating children from the ages of 16 and above. Below that, no, they're not going to be vaccinated. They just need to be wearing masks when they're in schools. Would I get my child vaccinated? I think I'll just echo what Andrew said. If just to minimize the risk of them transferring or passing the disease on to people who have underlying issues, then I would get them vaccinated. Or if they stand a chance of contracting the virus or something, then I'll still get them vaccinated. I think it's more or less the way I see it also with myself, you know, if my job tells me that you need to get vaccinated to extend your contract and I don't have another second job, then I will get vaccinated, you know. So And you have to understand that in some countries, specifically in Austria, if you have a child in school that's not vaccinated, for the most part, they can easily be ostracized. Now, we don't have a black community that's very big here, so you're going to do homeschooling, and how long are you going to do that for? So you, in most cases, you're better off just vaccinating them, you know, because, again, they don't feel welcome in school, and you're going to have to explain to them, and depending on how old they are, if they can be able to understand what you're trying to tell them and everything, and, you know, letting them know that they can't get, you don't want them to get vaccinated because it's not right, and then they'll be like, okay, but what about school? I can't go to school anymore. People are looking at me badly, or I can't do sports with the kids and everything. So, again, I think I'll just echo what Andrew said and everything. You know, I'll get them vaccinated.
Much obliged. African 1884. Different guy. That's interesting because he said they're vaccinating like 16 and up in Austria. I think it's lowered substantially in many parts of the United States. A little different. Okay. That answer your questions, Rachel in New York?
Yes. I think for the United States, it's 12 and up.
That's what I thought. Yeah, that's... Don't know. Interesting. I guess I'll ask. Is that something are you still thinking, or have you made a decision yet for your offspring? Are you going to do vaccinations for your young children?
Well, I have a 13-year-old, so I'm really considering it. And if she's going to get vaccinated, then I'm going to probably get the vaccine with her. And then I have two younger children, but they wouldn't qualify for a vaccination.
Lots to think about. So I said, like, woof, talk about those 200 questions. Like, man, you could probably be doing that the entire time you're parenting and never run out. Like, there's so many things to think about and that you would never think about and all the rest of it. So today is supposed to be Attempted Father's Day, but man, attempted mothers, fathers, wow, my highest regards. That is super challenging work. Whew, man. Much obliged, Rachel, in New York. Unless we missed anything, anything, any folks need to get in before we wrap up? We did our 90 minutes.
Gus, just very quickly, I won't labour the point. This British government, due to Brexit, is now running all over ex-colonial countries trying to make deals. So the government was in Ghana the week before last trying to strike trade deals. A little bit worrying, because they're going to be doing deals under the table. So that is a space worth watching. That's all I'll say.
Interesting. Okay, that'll be a good one to keep an eye on. Before we do this, let's see, next month, so it's the third Sunday of every month. So for July, I reckon we should be here. So that's July 18, when we should be around to do it again. Summer will be in full swing, so we'll kind of see. Now, that is something to think about, too. We said earlier in terms of there could be a lockdown later in the year. Like, there might be something like October, autumn, somewhere in there. Once people kind of go back inside when it's cold and you can't have as many activities as easily outside. That's something I had been thinking about as well. And, in fact, I think... there was a political, I almost want to say it could have been someone connected to the Biden administration, but since I can't name an exact person, I won't say that. But someone recently said that they were theorizing that in the U.S., they were hoping they could get enough people vaccinated so that they don't end up with having pockets, meaning areas where you have large numbers of people who are not vaccinated. So you could end up having certain areas that do have to do shutdowns again because... they have what they're calling flare-ups, a rise in COVID-19 cases in specific locations. So I kind of expect that sort of thing to happen, and that could be disruptive. I mean, if you have enough of these so-called pockets, areas that have to do a shutdown again, like that could disrupt lots of things, transportation, deliveries, like more chaos to come for the year. Anywho, if it means anything, I don't know if you all are celebrating, if it means anything to you all. Happy so-called Father's Day. Are you, or I guess the day is mostly over for you all. Did you all celebrate that today, Andrew, and African 1884, so-called Father's Day?
Yeah, it's been Father's Day today. I've got mixed feelings about Father's Day. One, it's a European holiday. Yeah, that's one issue. Looking into the history of Father's Day is always interesting as to where it came from. But it's a funny one, isn't it? Countries, you see, Western European countries don't support family. Men in general in Western European countries are, what's the word? Being toxic, this whole nonsense about, you know, toxic masculinity, basically undermining maleness, men, masculinity, and by extension, what it means to be a dad stroke father, right? And then on the next hand, celebrating having Father's Day. So for me, there's massive issues around a day like today. Massive issues, you know, that's if you can see your kid, your child, have, you know, in England we got, was it every other weekend, and half the holidays is called standard contact time for dads, and then you're celebrating Father's Day. So that, sorry, but that is our whole show in itself. What fathers mean in white Western countries. What is it to be a father in a white Western country? It's a joke, frankly, and it, you know, that needs to be said. So through all of this celebration and nonsense like that, right, really, it's to me, it's just pure nonsense, if I'm really honest. You know, and frankly, all young men, it's a big conversation, Gus, but I mean, you know, if a woman allows you to see your children, And that's even if you're married to her, right? Then she's the gatekeeper. You can count your lucky stars. And that's the truth. And so Father's Day should be had possibly, call it Dad's Day, call it what you want. It's for countries. It doesn't make sense in a white Western European country. That's my opinion. Sorry to be a, but that's my opinion.
Gus, I just want to add something. Could I add something to that?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes. I don't celebrate Father's Day, and I didn't do much today and everything, you know. It was just a regular day, normal day. I spent with my wife and my child, so there was nothing like a really big celebration or anything like that. We don't do that. We tend to not even do Christmas or Valentine's Day or any of that. So Father's Day is not on the list. No, it's not. But I'd like to add something, Gus, to just my final thoughts with regard to the whole COVID and my experience and everything. I just want to let folks know that on the planes, when you're traveling, people don't social distance, you know? That's what's crazy. So when you get on a plane, most planes are still selling tickets to capacity. So you're sitting next to someone you don't know. Folks are not wearing the masks well, you know? When it's time to eat, people remove their masks. Folks are coughing, sneezing. You know, so there's no social distancing happening on the planes. So if anyone plans to travel, because I have a friend who's in the U.S. and wanted to visit Kenya, and I told him he could go alone but not risk taking his children with him. You know, as long as we're going through this whole pandemic, you know, just don't put your children at risk if you're traveling. Just travel yourself as a grown-up and everything, but don't put your wife or your children or your husband at risk and everything. You know, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Much obliged, African 1884. Now, that's interesting, too, about the travel situation in different parts of the world, because I know, I just said now, the CDC, when they made that announcement, things changed immediately. So, at least as it stands right now, I have not been on a plane this year, but at least as it stands right now, according to the reports that I've read, travelers are still required by federal law to wear masks when on an airplane. Now, I do know when I was on a plane last year after all this started, exactly what he said, people were not wearing their masks. They were taking them off to eat, taking them off just because the white defiance, what I said before, people just didn't want to have it on and all that sort of thing. But it was required, and they would come fuss at you and put your mask back on, blah, 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 and all that stuff. That saw that happen with my own eyes. But at least, you know, reports I'm seeing right now in the U.S., the masks are still required on planes. But there are many, many reports where people are saying, we are about tired of this. We should let this expire, too. And that's what they've already done across the board, and or is in the process of happening, if it hasn't already, in many areas. So, yeah, that is massive to think about for the summer. If you're going to do traveling, and especially if you got children, how much risk do you want to put them at? And lots to think about for a parent. Like I said, I'm not a parent. Wow. So much to ponder. We will do it again, white people permitting, next month, third Sunday of July. Yes, that's July 18. Much obliged to African 1884. Andrew in the UK, always appreciate you all being so generous to take a little bit of time out of your Sunday evening to exchange views with us. I think it's important just to compare, contrast here, just some of the differences in how things operate in the plantation global system of white supremacy. Thanks to our listeners as well. Hope it was worthy of your time and energy, live or archives. Say consistently, sobriety would be best. There are so many dangers and things to ponder, make sense of in the known universe. We need fully functioning brain computers. In addition to being sober, if you're going out and about, I say this especially in the U.S. because they have so many firearms, man, be alert. Might be some sort of protest about Israel and what's happening there and all the rest of it. Be mindful. There are so many armed folks. You heard about the situation in Canada. Drove his car, killed four people, non-white people. Young, white, 20-year-old white man. Be alert. If it looks like someone is being hostile, loud out in public, hey, this is not the time for confronting strangers. If you didn't leave your residence, prepare to kill and or die. Get out of there. In my view, you, especially in the States, you should be thinking, this person could be armed, who's doing all this yelling and being hostile, and might have a whole entourage of folks who are armed and ready to commit violence. Just keep that in mind. There have been so many of those type of incidents throughout the past year and a half, especially here in the good old U.S. of A. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
no
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Shut I'm up. A victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.